This is a TechWeb Internet Insider Profile. I'm Paul Schindler.
If John D. Rockefeller were alive today, what he would recommend to Bill Gates is to start giving away the money as soon as possible in order to learn how to do it effectively.
Ron Chernow says there's many striking similarities between Bill Gates and John D. Rockefeller Sr. Chernow should know he wrote the recent authoritative Rockefeller biography, Titan. Chernow says John D. Rockefeller was richer compared to the total U.S. economy and gave more of his money away than Bill Gates. Chernow's book doesn't mention Bill Gates by name. It's strictly a Rockefeller biography. But Chernow has joined in the game of finding parallels between their lives. I spoke recently to Ron Chernow about Rockefeller and Gates. The interview began with a discussion of the fundamental dichotomy in John D. Rockefeller's life between his Baptist religion and his ethically dubious business practices. One of the difficulties people have is reconciling John Rockefeller's business practices with his religion and his philanthropic work. I think your book makes one of the strongest efforts I've ever seen to explain this dichotomy. How could he be, if I may put it bluntly, such a sharp operator in business and yet be the father of modern American philanthropy?
Well, you're exactly right. Rockefeller was always accused of hypocrisy. People saw him as somebody who was a ruthless businessman during the week and then went to church on Sunday to atone for his sins. This is the way things appeared outwardly. What fascinated me while researching Rockefeller's life was that to him his life seemed all of a piece. When he was a teenager, he was a devout Baptist, and he said that the preacher said to him that he should make as much money as he can and give away as much money as he can, and he did both with unparalleled success. This was all part of one divinely sanctioned circulation of money, so that he was not only making as much as he can from the time he was a teenager, but he was already tithing to the Baptist Church as a teenager. So here's a man who is operating on two pistons throughout his life, making as much as he can and giving away as much money as he can. And so he sees his life is all of a piece, whereas other people see him as a walking contradiction.
In perspective, I believe you concluded that Rockefeller was, in fact, wealthier.
It depends upon how you measure wealth. Rockefeller reached the peak of his net worth in 1913. He was worth $900 million. That would translate into approximately $13 billion today, well south not only of Bill Gates's $50 billion plus, but of Warren Buffett's $30 billion plus. But that's not the entire story, because in 1913, the federal budget was $715 million. So Rockefeller could have single-handedly paid the federal budget that year. The accumulated national debt of the United States that year was $1.2 billion, so that Rockefeller could have single-handedly retired three-quarters of the national debt. If you compare Rockefeller's net worth to the gross national product, it comes out to 2.5% versus a little more than 0.5% for Bill Gates. So if we ask ourselves the question, which man loomed larger in the economy of his day, Rockefeller, by that standard, was far wealthier. On the other hand, if we simply take the $900 million and convert it into contemporary dollars, by that measure, not only Bill Gates but Warren Buffett seem infinitely wealthier than Rockefeller. So there's no satisfactory way of measuring this.
You mentioned that his worth peaked in 1913 at $900 million. As I recall the number from your book, when he died, his estate was down to $26 million, pretty much as the result of philanthropy.
Yeah, in the 19-teens, when he was in his 70s, he began to divest himself of his wealth. He had already given away about $500 million to his philanthropies. That would translate into approximately $6 billion today. He gave away an equivalent amount to his son, John D. Rockefeller Jr., who in turn would give away about 90% of that money. Now, Rockefeller left himself with only, and I put only in quotation marks here, he left himself with only about $25 million in order to play the stock market. Rockefeller, although he was such a shrewd operator and an almost infallible businessman at Standard Oil, was something less than perfect as a stock market investor. And in 1929, he was dragged down in the crash along with everyone else. He was reduced, poor man, to having only $7 million. In 1929, he was 90 years old, and he spent a lot of time during the next 7 or 8 years fighting his way back to $25 million. In fact, they discovered that he died just 6 weeks short of his 98th birthday, and just 2 or 3 days before he died, this little shriveled up old man was still playing the stock market, still desperately trying to get back to where he had been in September 1929.
How would you characterize Gates' philanthropy? Is he on pace to be one of the true titans of philanthropy, or is he behind?
Not yet. The most recent figures that I've seen show that Gates has given away $800 million, where his net worth is well in excess of $50 billion. So this is really a very tiny percentage. Now, the lesson of John D. Rockefeller's life is that you have to work at philanthropy as hard as you work at business. And Rockefeller always felt that he was an enlightened philanthropist. And we have to remember, he was as enlightened a philanthropist as he was ruthless as a businessman. He felt that he was an outstanding philanthropist because he had started at the time that he was a teenager, so that by the time he was in his 40s, in other words, the time when he was Bill Gates' age, he was already creating Spelman College in Atlanta, which was named after Rockefeller's in-laws, and that was designed to educate freed female slaves and their daughters. By the time that Rockefeller was in his 50s, he was creating the University of Chicago. By the time he was in his early 60s, he was creating the Rockefeller University, which was the first medical institute devoted exclusively to medical research. He was creating the General Education Board that stimulated the formation of 800 high schools in the South. I think that if John D. Rockefeller were alive today, what he would recommend to Bill Gates is to start giving away the money as soon as possible in order to learn how to do it effectively. I know that Gates has been quoted as saying that he is putting off the philanthropy precisely because he realizes that one has to devote a lot of time and effort to it. But I don't think that you can have an excess of $50 billion and sit on it quite that long without, frankly, it becoming a big political issue. See, during the Gilded Age, the fortunes rolled up by people like John D. Rockefeller and Andrew Carnegie were being questioned. The very legitimacy of the system was at stake. And Rockefeller and Carnegie felt that they had to show that they were recycling most of this money back into society for the system to be vindicated. It's interesting that both Gates and his friend Buffett seem to be waiting to give the money away, which I think is a mistake both from a personal and a political standpoint. I understand that that Gates is actively running his business. This is a dynamic, ever-changing, expanding business, and he feels that it requires all of his time. But I think that he really should begin to make time for the philanthropy.
There were two very specific parallels that just took my breath away as I was reading the book, because they parallel some very recent events. Microsoft, at one time, had agreements with many PC makers that required the PC companies to pay a royalty to Microsoft, not for every machine they shipped with Windows on it, but for every machine they shipped. Microsoft's claim being that this made accounting easier. So even if you shipped a machine with DR-DOS or Unix or OS 2, you still paid Microsoft a royalty for that machine. There was a parallel, was there not, in a deal that John Rockefeller had with the railroads?
Yeah, there's a very striking parallel. Let me just preface my response by saying I'm not an expert on the computer industry, and so I'm very aware from things I've read and what people have told me about the situation that you just described. You know, and if that situation was as described, then there is a very striking parallel, because Rockefeller crafted a lot of secret deals with the railroads that not only gave him rebates, that is discounts on every barrel of oil shipped by Standard Oil, but it also gave him drawbacks, that is he would receive a fee for every barrel of oil shipped by his competitors over the railroads. So this would seem to be a historical parallel to the situation that you're describing.
I listened to Bill Gates testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee this spring. He and Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah engaged in about a 15-minute soliloquy on a very simple question. Everyone in the audience, every knowledgeable person in the audience, knew what Hatch wanted to know, and in fact, most of us knew the correct answer. But Gates declined to answer the question as intended and answered only the question as asked. I was struck by your descriptions of testimony by John Rockefeller, particularly in one court case where he took advantage of a misstatement by one of the attorneys. Can you describe that for us?
Yeah, well, actually, Rockefeller's earliest and most notorious collusion with the railroads was the creation of something called the South Improvement Company in 1872. And the idea was that Standard Oil would form this cabal with the railroads and would give such preferential rates to Standard Oil for shipping oil and such punitive rates to rivals that it would effectively make it impossible for anybody to compete with Rockefeller. When this conspiracy was exposed, it immediately fell apart. So it was a stillborn conspiracy, as Rockefeller liked to say. It never collected a dime. But the plot had been hatched. Now, years later, during a famous antitrust suit, Rockefeller was asked by the prosecuting attorney whether he had ever been a member of the Southern Improvement Company. And Rockefeller, who was a very foxy old gentleman with an elephantine memory, said, "No, I was never a member of the Southern Improvement Company." The attorney had misspoken, and Rockefeller profited from that. He was a very, very cunning witness, and as I describe in the book, he had a capacity for turning himself into this sweet, bumbling old man. He did a very good imitation of an Alzheimer's patient on the witness stand during one antitrust case. The opening question addressed to him was, "What is the business of the Standard Oil Company?" And Rockefeller had difficulty answering the question. And finally, after a couple of minutes, he said, "I think it operates a refinery in New Jersey." So he was prosecutors would throw up their hands in frustration because he would suddenly seem to be this amiable but forgetful old man. Of course, he knew exactly what he was doing, and he had a great deal of experience in being an evasive witness. A lot of lawyers said that he was the toughest witness that they had ever cross-examined.
Well, he was the toughest witness at the beginning of the 20th century, I think. Should Bill Gates ever be forced to take the stand in one of these lawsuits, I'd be willing to bet that he will be the toughest witness of the end of the 21st century.
But, you know, I think that one difference is I think that the power of public opinion, I think that Rockefeller for many years was able to get away with these shenanigans in the courtroom. I think that it would be much more difficult for a CEO to do it today. Things are more widely reported. I think that the public is less patient with that type of behavior. Remember, in Rockefeller's day, there was still very much the public be damned attitude. And because everybody remembers John D. Rockefeller as an old man handing out dimes, they picture him almost as this ham actor in old age. But in fact, when he was a younger man, when he was Bill Gates's age, he almost never gave interviews. He never allowed himself to be photographed, so that we have photographs of Rockefeller in his younger years just in private family situations, but there's not a single authenticated photo ever taken of John D. Rockefeller in a business situation. That is, there's no authenticated photo that shows him in an oil field or in an oil refinery or even in his office at 26 Broadway in Lower Manhattan. This was the man who created the world oil industry, and there is not a single oil-related picture of him, which is extraordinary, because we have a million pictures of Bill Gates with computers and all manner of high-tech gadgetry. And this is because we live in much more of a consumer age, an age of mass media, and there's an expectation that people will be more forthcoming when challenged.
I want to thank you very much.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to a TechWeb Internet audio report. Thanks for listening.